young girls, they do get wearied wearing that same old shaggy dress, yeah, yeah. But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness, yeah. You know she's waiting, just anticipating for things that she'll never, 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 never possess. Yeah, yeah. But while she's there waiting, and without them, try a little tenderness. That's all you gotta do. It's not just sentimental, no, no, no. She has her grief and care. Soft words, they all spoke so gentle, yeah. It makes it easier, easier to bear, yeah. You won't regret it, no, no. Young girls, they don't forget it.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, almost. Here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Well, we made it to another Friday, and that in itself is a big accomplishment, so give yourselves a hand. I'll tell you, each week it seems I'm not sure we're going to make it this far. Do you know what this week is? It's Disarm Hate Week.
Hate.
It can confront us in every part of our lives.
In our houses of worship.
In our doctor's offices.
In our children's schools.
In our movie theaters.
In our nightclubs.
And in our everyday lives.
When hate comes armed with a gun, it's deadly.
This is not the America we want to live in.
Nobody should be killed
because of the color of our skin.
Because of our gender identity.
Because of the God we worship.
Or because of who we love. The stakes have never been higher.
Join us
in demanding that our leaders do more to keep guns out of dangerous hands.
It's time
to disarm hate.
It is. That was a message put out by Every Town for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action and a bunch of other groups who are calling for an end to this gun violence. And sadly, Disarm Hate Week is a notoriously horrific week. This week, we saw the shooting not only in Alexandria, Virginia, that left five people injured. Steve Scalise still in critical condition. But there was another shooting on Wednesday as well that got very little news coverage because, you know, congressmen were under fire. But in San Francisco, four people were killed at a UPS center. Now, last night was the big congressional softball game. I'm going to read to you a little something here. Democrats won the annual congressional softball game, baseball game, sorry, for seven straight years. They lost last year because their players were tired. Do you remember why? Last year at this time, the House Democrats pulled an all-nighter the night before the game when they occupied the House floor. That was the night after, that was right after the Pulse nightclub shooting where 49 people were killed, 58 others injured. These House members were demanding an up or down vote on a bill to block people who are on federal terrorism watch lists from being able to buy guns. Remember that? It was in the news and then it disappeared because nothing happened. Nothing changed. The Pulse nightclub shooting was on June 12th. Tomorrow actually marks 2 years since the Mother Emanuel Church shootings in Charleston. And here we are, a year after that sit-in on the House floor, and nothing's changed. Yesterday, or Wednesday, the gunman shot a Republican congressman, an aide, a lobbyist, and two police officers during batting practice. You know what was scheduled to happen on Wednesday? Hold on, let me pull this other article up, because I wasn't aware of this until I read it this morning. But on Wednesday morning at 10 a.m., there was a meeting. The House Committee on Natural Resources was to take a vote or have a hearing on the SHARE Act. Now, embedded in the SHARE Act, in the Republican version of this bill, is a provision that would loosen restrictions on firearms, including allowing felons and domestic abusers to buy silencers. Now, it's bad enough that in Virginia, there's no registry, there's no background check. This shooter, who had a record of domestic violence, he was able to buy guns no problem. There, as far as I understand, no waiting list, no nothing. He just could walk in a store, buy a long gun, buy a pistol, buy ammunition, and go out and open fire on a baseball field. So this bill that was supposed to be either voted on or there was certainly a meeting about it was scheduled for 10 a.m. But of course, then the shooting happened, and now let's see, they've delayed it. They've postponed it until further notice. But listen to this. Despite the tragedy targeting members of their own party, Republicans on Wednesday indicated the assault will have no impact on their party's pro-gun stance. I don't see this as a gun control issue. That from House Freedom Caucus leader, those are the Teabaggers. They just have a new name. They're still the Teabaggers, but now they're the Freedom Caucus. Mark Meadows said that. He continued, I think to default to that would be a missed opportunity to be thankful for every moment we have, be thankful for our law enforcement, and ultimately to understand that the mental health component is an important thing for us to address. Well, let's address it, because now Republicans in the Senate, a small group of them behind closed doors, are writing their new health care bill that nobody except that small group, I think there are 13 senators, nobody aside from them knows what's in it. And Mitch McConnell is planning to bring this to the Senate floor for a vote. They're talking about within a week or two before their July 4th recess. Yeah, they get to go away for another couple of weeks again. And there will be no amendment process, no debate, no public debate, certainly. The reason they're doing it in secret is because they don't want to give us time to scrutinize what's in this. And so as to whether or not there are any protections for mental health issues, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. But seeing that it's Republicans writing this, I would say no, there isn't. Lindsey Graham said it'll have the same ending as all the other conversations about gun control. I don't know how this guy got a gun. I don't know if he did it legally. I don't know if he did it illegally. I have an AR-15. I'm not going around shooting people with it. Guns, knives, cars, bombs. That's the world in which we live, Graham added. Hey, Lindsay, you're wrong. It doesn't have to be that way. It's a lot harder to kill people with guns, knives, cars, and yes, bombs, than it is with guns. As every one of those Republicans who was on that field on Wednesday has said into the camera ad nauseum, and I know because I watch TV all goddamn day Wednesday waiting for the cable guy to show up to get my internet back up and running again, they all said, we were like sitting ducks. If the gate to the field hadn't been locked, he would have come in. They were all holed up in one of the dugouts, and every one of them said, we were like sitting ducks. If he could have gotten in there, he just would have gone down the row, and we would have had a lot of dead people on that field. Two things kept them safe. One is that the gates were locked. Luckily for them, luckily for all of us, the gates were locked. The other is that Steve Scalise was on the team, that he's a baseball fan, because only leadership members get a protective detail. So two of the Capitol Police who were there were his protective detail, and they're the two that saved these lives. They are the two, and they both got hurt, by the way, but those two Capitol Police officers saved the lives of all those members of Congress and their guests, the lobbyists, the aides, the children who were there, Joe Barton's kid was there, 10-year-old. And, you know, and then a question was asked, I have it in today's What's News, I believe, whether or not they need to start providing members of Congress with protective details. How about we do something to get these guns off the streets? Lindsey Graham, what do you need an AR-15 for? I don't know. Congressman or Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, you know, that's where Newtown happened. Even he said, I think we're beyond the place in which Washington responds to mass shootings. We don't. That in itself is a really, really sad commentary. You know, this is the country that we live in. I was talking yesterday about the Handmaid's Tale, right? That's what it's called, The Handmaid's Tale, which I watched the last episode of it before the show yesterday so I could talk about it. Now I understand there was going to be a second season, which I don't get because The Handmaid's Tale was a book and the way the book ended is the way the series ended. But I hear there will be a second part. I couldn't remember the name of the new country that was formed where the United States was, but it was Gilead. The United States becomes Gilead, this very provincial, religious, patriarchal society where women have no rights. And then somebody sent me an email and said, well, I don't think that'll happen here because women are so strong. It doesn't have to be specifically that. But when we see our rights whittled away, when we see healthcare being taken from us, when we see this upside down world in which we live becoming reality, you know, more and more, what's real doesn't matter. And things that are real, people are telling you are not real. You know what I call it, opposite world. I don't know how this turns out. I really don't. You know, this is a time I was really looking forward to today's show because Kelly Carlin was supposed to be with us. And Kelly Carlin, she won't be here today, by the way. I'm hoping we can reschedule for next week or the following week. Her father-in-law passed away last night. So obviously she has more important things to do today than come on my radio show. But the reason she was coming today, other than to check in, because it's been a while since she's been on, was to talk about an online webinar that she's running that begins 1 week from today. It's Wednesday, June 21st. It's going to be 10 live weekly webinars, I guess every Wednesday, beginning June 21st. And it's called Unplug with Kelly Carlin, a 3-month online summer sabbatical. And you can get all the information you want about it at kellycarlin.com/teaching. kellycarlin.com/teaching. I'll put the link on my blog after the show at nicolesandler.com where I post the day's show every day. But here's some of the things that she will cover in this 3-month online summer sabbatical. Hit the pause button on your life. Reclaim your peace of mind in these chaotic times. Live in joy. find real balance in this technology-driven 24/7 world. Gain clarity and discover who you really are. Connect with other curious and free-thinking seekers of self-awareness without sacrificing your intelligence, humor, or badass self. Rediscover your true self. That's just from her little poster on this course that she's beginning next week. Boy, if ever we could use something like that, now is the time. Because as much as members of Congress are singing Kumbaya, and the cable news channels, well, some of them anyway, CNN and NBC, MSNBC anyway, are trying to get them to do that. There's still so much ugliness and nastiness. I don't watch Sean Hannity, but he went on TV last night, and I took notes what I was reading. Now I can't find it. But he was calling Hillary Clinton killery. Really? And they talk about how we are the violent ones. Yesterday, we had a really good, I thought, really good discussion about just this, about how, they're all saying one thing today, it likely won't last very long. But I made it very clear, look, what I know of the American left is the whole mantra here is peaceful, nonviolent resistance, right? Nonviolence. That's what we on the left preach. And somebody went on the YouTube page and was arguing with, I guess, one of our regulars about it. The woman who was posting was calling me full of shit, that the Democrats are so violent. And she cited one example that one person may have said, just like this shooter the other day. Look, it sickens me to my core that this guy goes out and talks about being a Bernie Sanders supporter. Bernie Sanders does not support this. He was all about nonviolent protest. Yes, he marched with Dr. Martin Luther King, who was all about nonviolence, peaceful protest. That's, then you have Ted Nugent. And I couldn't pull the clip because the only places where it was posted, the entire interview was there. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to listen through an hour of Ted Nugent talking with somebody on New York City radio to find him fessing up to the fact that he's guilty of fomenting violence. When he from the stage would say to Obama, suck on my machine gun and worse, allegedly, he stood up and said, you know what? I've been at fault here. We need to ratchet down the talk. If that's true, I hope he really means it. I really do. But these aren't our only problems. You know that? The fighting in between, between the parties, although it's a big one. Just go, one of the things Kelly Carlin talked about is last summer, she got off of social media. Well, for many of us, that's not possible. I can't do it because I'm in the news business and I've got to stay on top of everything that's happening. And so as part of that, I read Twitter and I read Facebook. And I'll tell you, I get the news much faster from Twitter than I do from any other source. I'll see things on Twitter before I get the AP alert come up on my desktop. So it's not an option for me, although there are days that I wish I could because it gets my blood pressure high. I was talking about my heart rate that's been up so high lately. These days we just can't escape it. But we also have a problem in the Democratic Party. One of the big problems, I think, with Hillary Clinton's campaign was that it was so much about how horrific Donald Trump was and would be as president. And she never really gave us the reason to vote for her. Now, for me, just the idea of Donald Trump being elected was reason enough. It made me say she was not my candidate, but I would go to the voting booth. And I did on November 8th. And I filled in the little bubble next to Hillary Clinton's name because right actually above it was Donald Trump's name. And the idea of Donald Trump presidency, honestly, I didn't think it would be this horrific. I really didn't. I didn't think it would be this bad, but it is. Today he's down here in Miami and surrounded by a bunch of people cheering him on for rolling back some of the changes that President Obama made with our relationship with Cuba. This helped so many small business people, both here in South Florida and in Cuba, that are going to be hurt by these actions. Ali Velshi, who I really like, by the way, on MSNBC, they've teamed him up, in case he didn't know, because a lot of people don't watch MSNBC during the day. Stephanie Ruhle is now on at 9 a.m., and I like her. At first, I ridiculed her because she looks like Lindsay Lohan. Talk about shallow. I'm smacking myself into submission here. Not a good thing to do, by the way. But she actually knows her stuff, and she's fair and very good at what she does. They teamed the two of them up, Stephanie Ruhle and Ali Velshi, at 11 a.m. Eastern, and it's a show worth watching. Just thought I'd put that out there. He tweeted out today to Donald Trump, "Explain to me why you're so offended by Cuba's human rights record, but did a sword dance with the Saudis." You see, I think it's probably because the Cubans told him, no, you can't open a Trump hotel on our island. And I have a feeling if they would play ball, and I don't know that for a fact. It's just my guess, my educated guess. I think if they were to do that, then allow him to open a hotel there or put up a building there, that he'd be singing a different song today. But that's not what happened. And so once again, progress is being rolled back. Donald Trump has made enemies around the planet because of the way he speaks and the things he tweets. I don't know if you heard this. I think we could use some comic relief about now. Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia, I guess is in a tough re-election bid. And he was in a private, I don't know if it was a fundraiser, it was a private event. This was supposed to be off the record. Somebody recorded him and released this tape of Malcolm Turnbull having a little fun at Donald Trump's expense.
Donald and I, we are winning and winning in the polls. We are winning so much. We are winning like we have never won before. We are winning in the polls. Not the fake polls.
Not the fake polls.
Not the fake polls.
Not the fake polls.
They're the ones we're not winning in. We're winning in the real polls. They are so easy to win. Did you know that? I know that. Did you know that? I kind of know that. I know that. They are so easy to win. I have this Russian guy. Believe me, it's true.
Believe me. Believe me. By the way, speaking of fake polls, Donald Trump, it went on another Twitter tirade this morning, like the one in which he said, "I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director. Witch hunt." Yeah. So he did a couple of things there. One, he admitted that he's being investigated. Two, he's just making things worse. Yesterday, while the nation was still in shock over the shooting the day before, Donald Trump brought it back with another Twitter tantrum. This is what he does. But his polls, the polling numbers for Donald Trump keep going down. Yesterday, for the first time, he hit 60% disapproval rating. Today, I think it went up to 63 in Gallup, if I remember that correctly. One of them, one of the big ones, maybe it was AP. It was Gallup yesterday, had him at 60% disapproval. And I think it was the Associated Press poll today had him at 63% disapproval. What does Donald Trump tweet out? A graphic that has his picture with his hands clasped, and it says Rasmussen reports. In case you don't know, if you don't follow polling, Rasmussen is a reliable Republican-leaning polling company. They're always very favorable to the Republicans. And it says Rasmussen reports 50% approval index with today's date. In no reasonable world is Donald Trump at 50%. Anyway, he tweets that picture out and writes, "Great news, hashtag MAGA. Yeah. Make America groan again? Perhaps. All right. Well, Kelly Carlin can't be here today, but I read an amazing piece by our friend Gaius Publius over at downwithtyranny.com that goes along the lines of just what we've been talking about. So we'll take a break. We'll get what's news, and we'll come back with Gaius Publius next. Thanks for listening. It's the Nicole Sandler Show and NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
While the nation was still in a state of collective shock over the shooting at a congressional baseball practice Wednesday morning that left House Majority Whip Steve Scalise in critical condition, the president lashed out at reports that he's under investigation over whether he obstructed justice. Trump went on a Thursday Twitter tirade, claiming that the investigation is the single greatest witch hunt in American political history, that he said is being led by some very bad and conflicted people. He then went off on Hillary Clinton in a tweet storm Thursday afternoon, making sure the nation's attention moved from Wednesday's tragic shooting to the scandal surrounding his administration. To further complicate the issue, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein released an odd statement Thursday night, raising questions about what's coming next. The statement reads, quote, "Americans should exercise caution before accepting as true any stories attributed to anonymous officials, particularly when they do not identify the country, let alone the branch of agency of government with which the alleged sources supposedly are affiliated. Americans should be skeptical about anonymous allegations. The Department of Justice has a long-established policy to neither confirm nor deny such allegations." On Friday morning, Trump's Twitter tirade continued. He both confirmed he's under investigation and threw the deputy attorney general under the bus by tweeting, "I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director. Witch hunt." Vice President Mike Pence acknowledged that he's hired a private attorney to deal with investigations into Russian meddling in the 2016 elections. Meanwhile, at Nationals Park, the 56th annual congressional charity baseball game went on as planned Thursday night, with the Democrats routing the Republicans 11-2. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi sat for their first ever joint interview.
Are we in an age now where members of Congress need to have security with them at all times? Speaker Ryan?
Well, it's a tough age. It's a partisan, polarized country. What we're trying to do is tone down the rhetoric, lead by example, and show people we can disagree with one another. We can have different ideas without being vitriolic, without going to such extremes. And so that's what we're trying to demonstrate here. And members of Congress have got to get out and see their constituents. They've got to interact with their constituents. And so we can't have a deep barrier between members of Congress and their constituents, but we also have to be cognizant. Remember Gabby Giffords. Yesterday, Steve Scalise. So these are concerns that we have, but we have to be able to balance the openness and the security.
Do you think that the rhetoric on the left has gotten too intense, too demonizing of Republicans and President Trump?
No, I think that the person who perpetrated the crime yesterday has, but I think that people feel very strongly in their convictions, and some people, I always say, you can be passionate about your beliefs, but you have to be dispassionate how you
Although there were already signs of the kumbaya moment fading, many members were urging everyone, most specifically the president, to tone down the rhetoric. Arizona Senator Jeff Flake telling Chuck Todd,
"When you say you want the president to lead, is there something specific you think he could do that would maybe be a positive jolt to the system?"
Well, things that he could stop doing, referring to others in the other party as losers or using other language that just isn't becoming. I think, as President of the United States, you have a unique ability to reach the public and to say, hey, this point forward, we're going to change, and I'm going to change. And I think that would be welcomed, and I think it would rub off all down the line. I hope that it happens.
Reports say that Defense Secretary Jim Mattis will announce by next week that the Pentagon will send 4,000 additional American forces to Afghanistan. The president has given Mattis the authority to set troop levels. Trump is in Miami on Friday to announce he's pulling back on some of the U.S.-Cuba policy changes that were enacted by the Obama administration. Although it won't be a complete reversal, according to White House officials, Trump is to announce a revised policy aimed at stopping the flow of U.S. dollars to Cuba's military and security services and curtailing tourism. And finally,
this is big news. Fox News is dropping its fair and balanced slogan. I assume because they finally watched themselves. What? This isn't right at all. According to a Fox insider, the slogan was dropped because the phrase had been mocked. For now, Fox News will be using its other slogan, most watched, most trusted. But there are some other phrases that they briefly considered. CNN for your angry uncle. Thanks for watching, Mr. President. And perhaps most controversial rejected slogan of all, you'd be pretty if you smiled more.
Funny, they've yet to take me up on my suggestion for their new slogan.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
I got good news. And that's a bit of What's News for today. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these What's News reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. We are 100% listener funded, and we can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. You'll get all the regular shows and have access to the new Monday Music Show podcast and The Vault at NicoleSandler.com, plus bonus content. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Gaius Publius.
Oh, another winner!
Joins Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
Ah, and yes, Gaius Publius is here. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay, as okay as can be expected in this day and age, I suppose. How about you?
Well, I'm doing okay as can be expected in this day and age. These are quite the days and ages, aren't they?
They are. Let me ask you this question. Did you see the statement released by Rod Rosenstein, that really weird sort of what looked like a prisoner statement that he released last night? Americans should exercise caution before accepting as true any stories attributed to anonymous, quote, officials, particularly when they do not identify the country, let alone the branch of agency of government with which the alleged sources supposedly are affiliated. Americans should be skeptical about anonymous allegations. The Department of Justice has a long-established policy to neither confirm nor deny such allegations. That was released as a statement last night at like 9 o'clock, which is really weird, out of context, and leads me to believe there's something big coming today.
Yes, that's either post-emptive or preemptive, and it sure sounds preemptive to me.
Doesn't it? And in the last few weeks, although it seems like almost every day at around 4:35 o'clock, we get some bombshell dropped, the biggest ones have been dropped on Friday afternoons. So Fridays used to be, you know, when they do the news dump, things that they didn't want the news media to pick up on. Now it seems like the news media is having these bombshell stories dropping late Friday afternoons. And this sounds preemptive to me. I'm just bracing myself for something to happen this afternoon.
The other possibility is, he's talking about sources now and anonymous sources. A lot of the leaks that have come out of this investigation, not all of them, but a lot of them, are ultimately sourced to people who are in the security establishment currently, mm-hmm. which means that FBI people are leaking, CIA people may be leaking. That may be the source of that Christopher Steele's material, for
right.
example.
The dossier, as it were.
The dossier, yes. if the material that's coming from the current national security state is intended to bring down Trump, then we've got an interesting coalition of people who are in the security state, who are Democrats, who are probably some Republicans, but we're not sure. And a lot of anti-Trump media, the Fox News frame of that soft coup, you know, a stopped clock, right? They can be wrong about a million things and then be right and never be taken seriously, may be sort of what's going on. So who's Rod Rosenstein? I think he's a guy that's got a reputation for integrity. He may well know that somebody's about to leak something that he doesn't want people to pay attention to.
Right. Well, there's...
gets interesting. That's different than a bombshell.
That's true. I mean, that's true.
Because what he's saying is, if it's a leak, it's unauthorized, and don't take it at face value. It may not be true.
Right. And look, James Comey said as much during his testimony last week, that, you know, some of the stories that we've seen are not true. Some of them are way off, but they won't say what's true and what isn't. So we're left up to our own devices to try to figure it out. But the latest, this comes at a time when we're hearing that Rod Rosenstein might have to recuse himself, in which case the next deputy attorney general is a woman named Rachel, and I'm drawing a blank on her last name now, who I understand is not quite as nonpartisan as is Rosenstein or Mueller. So everything could be in flux. Then there's the rumors that Trump is going to fire both of them. So who knows? Are you as confused as I am?
You're putting me on the spot with that question. I'm going to say no.
Okay.
Because I've had an analysis of this whole thing that has so far proven pretty right. So I'm just watching the cards as they're played, pretty much knowing who's got what in their hands, simply because of the way the game is going so far. There's a coalition of people who want to take down Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, who's going to get there first? Is it going to be let me step back. There are a couple of things that could be wrong here. One of them is Russia could actually have altered the U.S. election.
Right.
I think that's unlikely. One of them is Russia attempted to alter the U.S. election. In a hard hacking the databases way, that's unlikely. In a soft social media influences way, mm-hmm. that may very well be true.
And that's what
the
FBI is saying.
That's what Comey
is saying happened, by the way.
That's not anything different than Correct the Record tried to do during the primary,
for example.
This is what lots of people do.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a crime? No. Obviously, the Trump administration has something to hide about Russia. What is it? It's unlikely to be what's been screamed at for the last month or so, treason, treason, treason. Russia mm-hmm. attacked our democracy and these people are traitors. What's much more likely is that the Russians tried to cut a deal with Trump, saying, if you get in, we can offer you this and we want those sanctions lifted. Trade for trade. This is dirty international
money,
which most of it is, big, dirty international money trading deals for deals. And that's likely what they're going to uncover. Now, is that a crime? Probably not. So what's the crime here? The crime will be the cover-up, even though it'll expose a lot of dirty crap,
mm-hmm.
frankly. The crime will be the cover-up. The cover-up occurred after he's president. Can he be prosecuted for a crime committed in office? I think it's been established during Watergate that the president cannot be, the vice president can be,
mm-hmm.
but the president can't be prosecuted by a court of law in the United States while in office. The redress to remove the president is impeachment, that process in Congress. So what's this group of people who are trying to bring down Trump trying to do? They're trying to murder his support to the extent that the Republicans have no recourse in Congress, have no recourse but to save their electoral skins by impeaching him. That will be the only way that the Republicans in Congress will impeach him. And then we get President Pence.
Well, who's worse?
Who is who is going to be worse, because he's going to be normalizing the operation of government and doing every bad thing that's in his head, which means all of the things that are going on right now, but he'll be doing them without self-sabotage.
Right. And he knows how to do it.
Valuable in office. Trump is self-sabotaging himself.
Right.
And not only that, he's knifing everybody who touches him, including Jeff Sessions, who's probably the next to go. I think we need Trump in office for 4 years so that his administration can be completely ineffectual.
No, I think you're right.
My take.
Okay, and you're right. You're nowhere near as confused as I am. You've got your narrative that makes perfect sense. I have no idea what is right and what has happened. I feel like I'm being bombarded from all ends by all these different theories and all these different possibilities. And at the top of the list is Trump bombarding everyone on Twitter. I mean, just look at what he's done over the last 24 hours. Despite the phony witch hunt going on in America, the economic and job numbers are great. First of all, when he, 2 years ago today, he announced his candidacy. When he poo-pooed the jobs numbers, that's all. He didn't use the word bullshit, but in essence, that's what he said. Now he touts them because they're his. The fake news media hates when I use what has turned out to be my very powerful social media. Over 100 million people, I can go around them. A lot of people are saying he needs to stop tweeting. I hope he keeps tweeting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He thinks he's safe as long as his base continues to support him. So I think that's a true statement. His base has continued to support him.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just drill down to the Trump voters, he's not losing a lot of his favorables are not ramping up the way they are in the whole rest of the country, or his unfavorables aren't ramping up the way they are in the rest of the country, which means that the Republicans in Congress are kind of on a fence. If we dump him, will we get killed by Trump's base in the election? If we don't dump him, will we get killed by everybody else? And that's a district by district and an in the aggregate kind of decision, because how many seats can we lose to keep the House? How many seats can we lose? How many can we gain in the Senate? Because in the next round, the Democrats are the most vulnerable in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Can we actually pick up seats and support Trump? Those are the those are the calculations that are going on.
And meanwhile, he keeps sabotaging himself. Anyway, Gaius Publius is with us. One of the reasons, and thank you for stepping in at the last minute today. I mentioned to the listeners, Kelly Carlin had a death in the family. She was supposed to be here. But it allowed me to talk with you. And you wrote a great piece that's up at downwithtyranny.com right now, The Collapsing Social Contract. And this is, I opened the show today talking about it. I talked about it yesterday, too. It seems like the world is crumbling around us. I'm one of those people. And I fought lung cancer in the last year, and I have my health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. And one, as of now, I go in Tuesday morning to get the results of my latest CAT scan, but I know it's clear. And then I get to have another brain MRI next week as well. So it's an ongoing process. But as of now, I believe I'm 9 months cancer free. So that's good. It frightens me knowing that this time next year I could be without insurance. And I know that the Republicans right now are talking a good game, a big kumbaya moment after the most recent shooting. But I also know they're still secretly in a back room writing their new healthcare repeal and replace bill, and we have no idea what's in it. It seems to me like these Republicans are doing their best to destroy our social safety net. And that's kind of the gist of what you were writing about. Are we just headed down this rabbit hole from which there's no exit?
We're trying to. We may not succeed. This goes back to Trump and his competence. What I've been hearing about that healthcare bill is that it's a non-starter in the Senate. That they've got the same problem in the Senate that they had in the House. Even though they've softened it,
mm-hmm.
they may not be able to soften it enough to get the result they want. But to answer the question about what is the goal, I've been giving a lot of thought to writing a piece about what happens if the right wins absolutely, because that is the goal. You've got it.
Mm-hmm.
If the right wins absolutely and completely, the world, the U.S. will be rolled back to before the New Deal. might be rolled back to before Teddy Roosevelt as well, which will absolutely destroy the country, and it will tear apart, as it's already started to do, and I'm including the neoliberal Democrats in this, mm-hmm. already started to do, to destroy what I've been calling, but it's the right word for it, the social contract. So yes, that's the road we're on. Will we get to the end point? I don't know. But there are two end points, and neither one of them is pretty. As I wrote in the piece, one's worse than the other. Each one is worse than the other one, which is an interesting phenomenon mathematically. But anyway.
I always wonder, though, to what end? I mean, they have constituencies who, you know, I read each day, I see a story somewhere. I saw one today about, you know, a woman in the Midwest who is, you know, disillusioned with Trump and saying, I hope he knows we're not with him anymore. The people who are going to be most hurt by if they're able to roll back the Affordable Care Act, and he's already sabotaging it. I mean, one way or another, there are going to be problems next year when people go to buy insurance, whether they're able to totally repeal it and replace it or not. It's going to be worse than it was this year, which was not a big day in the park for a lot of people. And it's his own supporters who are going to be hurt the most. So to what end? I mean, it's going to get to a point where everyone's going to go, my God, we're all fucked.
Yes. Our current crop of wealthy, the people that took power when Reagan took power and held power through Clinton, through Bush, through Obama, our current crop of very, very wealthy are monomaniacal psychopaths. And I mean that in the literal sense. These are people that will burn a village to save it. And there's no human description, humane description for that kind of behavior. They're hell bent on destroying us. At some point, we're on a road now where we will end up in one of two places. I mentioned in the article what those places are. And it relates to the shooting. The kickoff point mm-hmm. for the piece is the shootings. In fact, two shootings in one day. Whereas one Twitter person said. Let me see if I can quote him because he or her, because it was said very well. It's Mary Ann W. via Twitter. Seriously, another multiple shooting? So many guns, so many nut bars, so many angry nut bars with guns. And to which Sam T. replied, we live in a world where multiple dead in San Francisco shooting can't cut through the news of another shooting on the same day. Mm-hmm. These things are coming at us faster, and it's a lot like climate change. Which is to say, yes, there are storms, and yes, there are crazy people, and yes, there is random violence in the world, and we've all seen it all of our lives. But there's also the phenomenon of increasing frequency that tells you something else is going on. So what else is going on? The United States is being crushed by its owners, by its wealthy. I live downtown in a city with homeless as part of the community. These are people that I see every day as I walk around. I know who's been there, who's died, and I can see the increase in the numbers. I can see the increase in desperation. I can see the change in population. They grow larger. They grow more desperate. They grow angrier. I'm watching it. This year is different than the last couple of years. People are in pain. If you look at that case Deaton study about opioid use and death by suicide, death by alcoholism, death by opioids in white working class communities, non-Hispanic working class communities, you're seeing a nation being crushed, and it's turning on itself, and it's killing itself. It's killing each other. At some point, that violence is going to get to some kind of a critical mass where things are going to escalate towards a sense of chaos that's going to require some kind of increased police presence to stop it. At that point, we're on our way to either, these are the endpoints now, that's not a prediction, but these are the endpoints, a fully failed state like Libya, or a fully clamped down state like East Germany.
Yeah,
those are the only two endpoints for a nation that is increasingly violent against itself. I mean, the word for the middle stage of that transition is civil war.
Yes. Well, you're right. This country is already in a pre-revolutionary state.
Yes.
And what do you mean by that?
I mean that if you look at, well, pre-revolutionary means people are about to say, screw you, mm-hmm. to the government and to the people who own the government. If you look at the 2008 campaign, what gave Obama such a surge? Yes, we can.
Yeah.
People thought they were voting for a middle finger to the establishment, and what they got was the establishment back.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers and his support in 2012 was a shadow of his support in 2008 mm-hmm. among the people that were inspired by Yes, We Can. But Mitt Romney and his 47% handed Obama a huge gift. Not that he was at risk to lose it, but he didn't help himself with that. And then you get to 2016, and what do you have? On the Democratic side, you've got a surging middle finger to the establishment candidate, Bernie Sanders, who I believe had to have the nomination taken from him by a number of things, including his own stumbles around Black Lives Matter and things like that, but also by the entire Democratic establishment and the media Democratic yep. establishment, yep. including the MSNBC hosts, who did everything they possibly could to make sure that Hillary Clinton was the establishment candidate, yep. was the candidate of the Democrats. On the Democratic side, that middle finger went to Donald Trump and his candidacy. You could have had easily in an alternate world, you could have had a Trump versus Sanders, two middle fingers to the establishment candidacies, in which Sanders would have wiped the floor because Donald Trump was the most beatable Republican candidate in a non-change year
yeah.
of any Republican we've seen. In a change year, he's got an ace. And only Sanders had the ace that beats his ace. That's pre-revolutionary. Look at that election.
Right.
That's pre-revolutionary, and it's expressed through electoral means.
Yes, but
we're going to start expressing it through non-electoral means.
But let me ask you this, okay? But before we get to non-electoral means, you know, if we can hang on for another 3.5 years, and that's a tall order at this point, we will have another election. My worry is that the Democrats don't seem to have learned anything from their mistakes. We're still, you go on Facebook, mostly on Facebook, I see it, where people that, you know, the Bernie people and the Hillary people are still fighting with one another. Now, we talked all through the election. I was a diehard Bernie person. I said earlier, I gladly voted for Hillary Clinton because I saw above her name on the ballot was Donald Trump's, and I realized he was the only other alternative, and I would have done anything in my power to make sure he was not president. Obviously, I didn't have enough power. But I don't know that the Democrats have learned anything from what we are going through or what we've gone through. And until they do, I think we're screwed.
That's right. I think the Democrats are fully capable, just as they were in 2016, they are fully capable of throwing away an excellent opportunity in a surge election year.
Yeah.
I mean, this election promises a competent, as Howie Klein says, and I know you have him regularly on your show,
mm-hmm.
as Howie Klein often writes, a competent DCCC and DSCC could put up candidates that could wipe the floor with about 30 or 40 Republican, safe Republican seats. There are places, as you know, Nicole, and many in the audience probably know as well, there are places in Texas, for example, where Hillary beat Trump and you still have a safe seat for a Democrat in the House. That's absolutely ridiculous. There are places where you've got majority or plurality Hispanic people who would throw out a Republican
right.
if they could find a decent Democrat to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democrats are doing everything they can, I think, to by my count, they have thrown away five good chances to make a new first impression. since the election.
It's amazing. Yeah. And now we're just 4 days away, I think, from the special election in Georgia. And, you know, the stuff I'm seeing for all the kumbaya talk on YouTube, I've got a mailer that the Republicans sent out. Hollywood liberals are trying to buy a Georgia House seat for John Ossoff. And the graphic is Rosie O'Donnell, Nancy Pelosi, Kathy Griffin, John Ossoff, and Jane Fonda, and they're all carrying bags of money and throwing money around. I mean, this is the kind of shit they're doing. But unfortunately, I don't know that the Democrats are doing any better. This is the most expensive congressional race in history. And I'm not in Georgia. I don't know what it's looking like on the ground. But, you know, even though the polls are looking good for Ossoff, I'm scared.
Well, it's going to take a lot of Ossoff wins to make a difference.
Yes.
Yes, that one matters. But notice that the Democrats didn't throw a lot of money at, was it Quisp?
Quisp,
the guy in Montana,
right,
who was in shouting distance as well until he didn't get the support he needed. I don't know that he would have won or not. Ossoff believes in austerity. He would be a liberal Republican in any other era. He believes in balancing the budget. So, yes, vote for Democrats. Yes, do that. But this social safety net that we're talking about is being shredded by both Democrats and Republicans and neoliberal Democrats. So we're not out of the woods simply because we put a kinder, gentler torturer in office.
Right.
Not,
and that's
not that
all
you're we're voting for when you vote for your liberal Democrat.
Torture. And again, it's in this case, I say it is the lesser of two evils. But right now, we need the Democrats to take back control of the House. And the only way to do it is one seat at a time. You know, but just remember, Bernie Sanders got raked over the coals because he questioned whether or not John Ossoff was progressive. And he got raked over the coals, not by the Republicans, but by the Democrats who were still going, well, Bernie Sanders, not even a Democrat. This is what I mean when I say they haven't learned their lesson. Either we get along or we don't. I don't. Were you at the People's Summit by any chance last week?
No, I was not. I was not.
Nor was I. But I, if you don't mind, I'm going to play a clip. This is Bernie Sanders speaking at the People's Summit last Saturday.
Looks like we are going to make the political revolution. Our ideas and our progressive vision, we are the future of this country. Nope.
Nope, he says. Nope.
It's not Bernie, it is you. We are in this together and always have been and always will be. There is no question. There is no question. There is no question that we have won the battle of ideas. And we are continuing to win that battle. And that is, brothers and sisters, no small thing.
But he did go on to criticize the Democratic Party and the fact that they haven't learned their lessons and, you know, history, we're doomed to repeat itself if we don't learn. And for that, he took a lot of criticism.
Yes, he did. And there is a real rift in the Democratic Party. And he's exactly right that they have won the battle. His platform has won the battle of ideas. So everybody who's talking about unity in the Democratic Party, you have to unify behind somebody. Who are you going to unify behind? Are you going to unify behind the Obama faction or the Sanders faction? And should the Sanders faction pretend to support destructive social policies for the sake of unity? Or should the Obama and Clinton faction support winning agendas and winning policies in order to unify the party? That unity requirement goes both ways. And I think the requirement that I'm hearing from everybody who supported Clinton is, yeah, let's have unity, and you have to follow us while we're in charge.
Yeah, that,
well,
and that's
where
the
are
really,
you leading us
right,
with that? With
that's
that
the
unity?
Problem. But but then the other bigger problem is if those are our two choices, and you know that's the choice that the Democratic establishment is giving us, and the other choice is another Donald Trump term. I mean, where do we go from here?
Well, that's the right question, and the answer is to take you and me out of the equation, because as you said earlier, we are remarkably unpowerful when it comes to our two votes.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is the country in the aggregate is going to pick these Democrats or those Democrats as a choice. They've already not picked those Democrats, Clinton, when it came to key states that gave Donald Trump the election.
Yep.
Are the Democrats who are in charge, not us, but the Democrats who are in charge, going to offer the voters more of those Democrats and roll the dice? And frankly, this is not a game in which we're participants. This is a game in which we're spectators.
Yep.
And in the case of someone like yourself, victims.
Oh boy.
Because of the healthcare thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we need to keep pushing for the good candidates to step up. Please run
Absolutely.
For office. Gaius Publius, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm going to post a link to the article we discussed. It's at downwithtyranny.com, but I'll put a link on my blog as well. Find Gaius on the Twitters at Gaius_Publius. And here, whenever I can cajole him into coming on. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, and good luck to you, Nicole.
Thank you so much. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye. Gaius Publius, everybody. And with that, we're done for the week. I'll be back Monday with the music show and Tuesday with Gotta Laugh to take on a whole new week. Stay sane, everyone. Thanks for listening.
With broken hearts, broken.